But I am thankful for the several friends. There are so many different ways in which we're connected, but Focal Point is a great way for us to be connected. I'm grateful for the privilege to be back at Focal Point again this year. It has become a source of great spiritual strength for me. I appreciate the assignment that I've been given. And I thought that it was very fitting, whoever arranged this, for James Johnson to come and pick me up. Those from university know the Johnsons. I remember we went over some of the same ground this year we did last year. For those of you that don't know what Brother Johnson did before he retired, he went and negotiated on the real estate end of Payless Shoe Source locations to be leased. When they were going to open a new shoe store in whatever place from coast to coast. Well, today he told me a little bit more about how Payless got to be Payless. For many of us, including me, I've just always known that there were hundreds. Turns out there are 5,000 of them. And I just maybe perhaps thought that it's always been that way. He was telling me about some of the innovations, some of the changes that they went through in the process that caused them to be where they are today all over the globe. But he told me that it began with a single store in Topeka, Kansas, with a rubber mat on the floor and just a couple of aisles of shoes. Well, you have to ask yourself, how do you get from a single store in the late 1950s to 5,000 of these in different locations all over the country and all across the world? Well, he talked about the very thing that he did, and there are others who did his job, and the changes that have come about that have caused them to have to see beyond Topeka, Kansas, and to see all the way across the world. What had to happen was that the three men who started that store had to have vision. And that's what we're going to be talking about in the time that we have this afternoon. Now, the title that was assigned, Where There Is No Vision, comes from Proverbs chapter 29 and verse 18. And there, of course, the Bible says where there is, at least in the first part, where there is no vision, the people perish. Just for a moment, I'd like us to understand the context of that passage, that passage is not talking about goal setting and vision planning. When it says where there is no vision, the people perish, it's talking about divine revelation. It's talking about the fact that, as the New American Standard says, where there is no vision, the people are unrestrained. Where the people didn't listen to the prophets and the message that God had given to them, then the people were doomed. The people were going to be morally out of line. Of course, you can see that from the second part of the verse where it says, "He that keeps the law is blessed." And so the idea is when we're guided by the Word of God, we're going to be going the right direction. God is going to bless us in a spiritual sense. Now, while that's the context, I think we appreciate the principle, especially when we get to passages like Luke chapter 14, verse 28 through 30, where there has to be an adequate counting of the cost to understand what's involved in seeing a project to its very end. There was a story that was told, purported to be true, about a group of pioneers who allowed themselves to change their lives completely, and they boarded a ship by 350 years ago and came to the northeastern coast of what is now the United States. And this hardy group of individuals, they got there, and the first year they planned a city. They drew up a town charter. In the second year, they appointed a town council. In the third year, the town council proposed a highway, a road that would go about 5 miles out into the wilderness. In the fourth year, the town tried to impeach the town council because they said that they didn't understand why it would cost so much money and why you would waste such expense to build a road out into the wilderness. Now, here were individuals who were able to go 3,000 miles and to go through the hazards of the deep to go out to a new world. But it took them 4 years not to be able to see 5 miles out of town. Now, I want you to think about where it is that you come from. Each of us coming from several different congregations, it's a great place for me to say. It's amazing to see how much this has grown. I have been to every one of these, and I remember crowds that were significantly smaller. And to see a room full, I know that several states are represented. Some of you have come from congregations that are relatively new, but a great many of us congregations that have been in existence for several years now. We realize that we're standing on the shoulders of pioneers, those who had the vision and the foresight to dream big and to think big. But so often we have to ask ourselves, can we see, do we have the vision that our spiritual forefathers and our congregations had? You see, we've got to be able to have that vision. We've got to be able to see what can be. So that's what we want to talk about. Now there are several areas in a congregation's life where we've got to be able to have that ability to see, that vision, that goal setting. We've got to be people of vision in at least these ways. We have got to be people of vision when it comes to our people. What is our vision for the people who attend the congregations where we are? And this, of course, would have some direct impact on preachers and elders, but anyone who's actively involved in the work of the Lord. And for you to be here, I would assume that you're in that category, even if you're not a preacher or an elder. We have to be people of vision when it comes to our people. What is your congregation's vision for your young people? What is your vision for your older people? What is your vision, right in line with what Glenn said, for your hurting people and for your weak people? When we look at what the church is, it's the called out people. We've got to have a vision that sees what's going to be of our people. We also have to have a vision when it comes to our facilities. What are we going to do with our facilities? We're just going to patch up what's broken and what's leaking and go year to year just seeing it as a maintenance item? Or what plans do we have for our facilities? What kind of way are we going to use it as an inreach or outreach into our community, rather? What are we going to do to try to have programs that help to build the church using our facilities? Are we using our facilities to their best purpose? Are we always going to be in these facilities? If we don't have vision, then we're not going to be able to adequately address that particular concern. What is our vision with regard to benevolence? Most congregations have a reactive policy. What's a reactive policy? People come, well, that's true. That's exactly right, because they haven't planned. Somebody comes, knocks on the door, rings the doorbell, however they get access to your building. They come in, they say, I'm coming from somewhere else. A lot of times they can convince you pretty well, perhaps, that they're a member of the Church of Christ. Sometimes that may be the case. And their car's broken down, they need some money, and so you have a petty cash drawer, you call the deacon involved, and then you give them what they need. That's reactive. What kind of vision do we have to be proactive? That is, to use our benevolent, the benevolence that needs to characterize us to reach out into our community. Now, benevolent needs need to be in our vision because the Lord's going to hold us accountable for that. Matthew chapter 25. What are we doing to be people of vision in that regard? Well, there's other areas in which we need to think in terms of vision. What is our vision in our congregations with regard to mission work? Are we the congregation that has 25 missionaries that we give $5 a month to? We never met them. We don't know anything about them. They're just a black hole that we send a check to. Is that going to be our vision from now on? Or are we going to refine that? Are we going to have a committee or some means of keeping touch with our missionaries? What are we going to do to develop an idea or a passion for mission work from within the congregation? When it comes to mission work, are we going to perhaps look at a streamlined approach where we don't have as many missionaries, but we're investing more in each missionary? Are we going to have it as a goal or an ambition that we're going to be one who is a sponsor and provide support in entirety for a missionary? You see, it's going to require vision.
That's right.
But then there's also evangelism. We're going to have a vision for evangelism. What is our vision for evangelism? It cannot simply be, let's hire a preacher with a great personality and let's make sure we put that in his contract. He's going to be an outgoing guy who's got Bible studies going. We'll talk about the importance of us as preachers setting the tone there. But certainly we understand we need a better plan than that in evangelism. How are we going to train people? And what methods? In what ways are we going to be people of vision when it comes to evangelism? I want to say that the best people on this earth are children of God.
Amen.
But sometimes we haven't sat down and given thought as a congregation. Either we have made no plans whatsoever, or our plans have been so devoid of faith that we are only able to do very significantly little in what we set out to do. And so I believe that this lesson is very important. I want to divide it into two parts. It's a two-point lesson, if you will. I want to look, first of all, at some of the reasons why we don't set a plan, why we don't engage in vision planning. And then the second thing I want us to notice is how we can go about to do that. I want to let that second part particularly to be that which is practical in its nature. Number one, with regard to what keeps us from being people of vision. I want you to notice with me just a few things here. First of all, by way of definition, when I say vision, vision is a mental picture of a desired future.
That's right.
It is a picture that can be seen of what is not yet, but what will be. Sometimes our vision for God's work is far too small because we let things get in our way of being people of vision. So what stands in our way? I can't be exhaustive here, but I want to mention just a few things before we get to the practical side. Number one, sometimes a lack of thought stifles our vision. A lack of thought. When we look at our own personal lives, we have financial planners. We have a life's plan. We give a great deal of thought to our future, but so often we're not thinking about the future of the work of God. That was the problem in Haggai's day, wasn't it? They had come back from captivity and they were building their own houses, but they weren't rebuilding the house of the Lord. And so God calls them on that and He says, I want you to consider my house and your ways. Haggai chapter 1, verse 4 through 7. They had not been thinking about it. We can't dream about it if we haven't thought about it first.
That's right.
So a lack of thought sometimes stifles our vision. God deserves those who He has saved to be passionate and to care about the future of His church. The psalmist said in Psalm 119, beginning at verse 59, he says there, I thought of my ways and turned my feet unto your testimonies. I made haste and delayed not to keep your commandments. And so a lack of thought keeps us from being visionary. But then number two, may I suggest that a lack of faith stifles our vision. So often what happens is that we base our budgets based on what we're presently performing. We also make our plans based on what we feel like that we can do without needing God's help. We realize that as you go out on the limb, that's where the fruit is. And I'm not suggesting that we're foolhardy. And I realize what kind of economic times that we live in. But I look back at a church in the first century that had very little resources, that had very little respect in the community. And what they did have was a living hope beating in their breast. 1 Peter 1 and verse 3. They had faith that caused them to be people who were people of vision. Jack Bannon in his book Untapped Potential said that fear is fraudulent evidence altering reality. Well, what's the fraudulent evidence? Thinking that me and you is all that's involved in growing the Lord's work. But he also said that faith was this. It was fearless attitude inspiring troubled hearts. You see, we need to work from our faith and not play to our fear. But so often we're not planning big. We're not making those dreams, setting those goals because of a lack of faith. What God is telling us to do is to reach out and to grab His almighty arm. Even sometimes we don't know where some of those things are going to come from. Resources, people. In Luke chapter 18 and verse 27, the Bible tells us that what's impossible with men is possible with God. Mark chapter 9 and verse 23, everything is possible to him who believes. Michigan State was playing UCLA in football some years ago, back when Duffy Daugherty was the coach. And it was tied 14-14 in a very important ball game. Dave Kaiser went out to kick the field goal, hopefully the winning field goal, and in fact, he did kick it. And he came back and Daugherty was slapping him on the back and congratulating him, but he said, I noticed that you didn't look up when you kicked. And Kaiser said, that's right, I just looked at the referee to see how he would signal it. So I forgot my contact lenses and I couldn't see the goalpost. I'm sure Daugherty must have aged several years just hearing that, sending out a blind kicker to kick the winning field goal. But you know, if we wait until we can see what there is before we do it, we're either not going to do anything significant,
right,
or our plans are going to be far too small. God needs some Davids unafraid of the Goliaths of our day. God needs some Elijahs who are not afraid of 400-to-1 odds even. God needs individuals like Moses who are afraid neither of the Pharaoh or the deep Red Sea. God needs John the Baptists who are literally willing to stick out their neck for the cause of Christ. So often we're not dreaming, we're not setting goals because of a lack of faith. The early church did not get where it went, which was all over the world, by saying, "I'm afraid," or "we can't afford it," or "we've never done it that way before." But then number three, a lack of enthusiasm stifles our vision. When the thought of God working through us to do great things in this world truly excites us, we will dream more often and much bigger. Colossians 3, verse 23, "What we do for the Lord, let's do it heartily, as unto the Lord and not unto men." Eugene Ormandy was a conductor for the Philadelphia Orchestra. And one time he dislocated his shoulder while leading the orchestra. It has been bantered about as to what it was that he was conducting at the time. And many believe perhaps it was one of Brahms' symphonies. There is a symphony in which Brahms, the original has been found, in which he wrote in his own hand at one point in the symphony, "as loud as possible." A few notes later, it said, "louder still." I wonder if Ormandy was giving all he had in that symphony. I know whatever it was, he was giving it his all. And I have to ask myself, have I ever dislocated anything in serving the Lord, even my necktie? You see, enthusiasm has to be a part of who we are as the people of God if we're going to have vision, if we're going to be those who set goals. You've stepped into a church building, and so have I, where there was no passion, where the people were dead.
Yes.
There has to be a revival there.
Right.
And when there is, people will be ready to set goals and to dream dreams. Upon the plains of hesitation, bleached the bones of countless millions who on the verge of victory sat down to wait, and waiting they died. Brethren, we must get excited about the prospects and about the future of the church. Romans 12 and verse 11, "Do not be slothful in zeal, be fervent in spirit, serving the Lord." You know, it's sometimes like trying to get your teenagers to take out the trash. I have three teenage boys, they're good boys. But you know, they're like they're boys. And I'm sure girls are the same way. And we talk about the principle, I may have heard Glenn Collie say many years ago, that delayed obedience is disobedience. Even as they get up in the upper teen years, that's a principle you still have to be working on. You ask a teenager to take out the trash. Here's a child you brought into the world. Here's a child that you have provided their needs. Here's a child you've done things for they couldn't do for themselves. How does it feel as a parent when you say, "take out the trash," and they'll say, "I'll do it later"? But then we think about our Lord, who gave His Son for us, who has given us every spiritual blessing in heavenly places in Christ Jesus. How does He feel when it comes time for us to reach a world for Christ and we say, I'll get to that later? You see, we've got to have passion. We've got to have zeal. And when we do, we'll be those who are eager to plan. How does God feel about an unenthusiastic church? We don't have to wonder, do we? Revelation 3, verse 15 and 16. "You have the Laodiceans who were neither hot nor cold. They were lukewarm. He said, I will spit you out of my mouth." But when a church is zealous, there's a church that God can do incredible things with. We have Alan Webster in Bear Valley right now holding a gospel meeting. I think they might miss me tonight. Alan is a preacher for a church of less than 200 people. I know those elders. I know that congregation. I don't know. Have you ever heard of the Jacksonville Church of Christ? I mean, some of you are from the other side of the river. Okay? But many of you have not heard of the Jacksonville, Alabama Church of Christ. Have you ever heard of Polishing the Pulpit? I mean, have you ever heard of that? How many of you ever heard of the Great Smoky Mount Marriage Retreat, the largest marriage retreat among churches of Christ? You ever heard of House to House, Heart to Heart? Same congregation. Blue-collar workers, enthusiastic about the cause of Christ. Perhaps we have listened too long to what we can't do,
yes,
instead of what we can do through Christ.
That's right.
But then also, may I suggest that something else that stifles our vision is a lack of energy. You see, dreams require us to get up off the couch Get up off the pew. Get out of the church building and get out of the world where the lost are. Somebody says be a self-starter and you won't need a crank to get you going. We need to be those who are willing to get out and to push ourselves to do the work of the Lord. Sometimes we fail to dream because of the commitment that it requires of us in order to see it get done. Now, every congregation has dreamers. And that's what we're talking about here to some extent. Not just wild pie-in-the-sky dreams, but you got to have people who are idea people, people who dream it. But you've also got to have a lot of foot soldiers who are willing to get out there and get it done. And the dreamers need to demonstrate that they can be foot soldiers too and not just come up with the ideas. A lot of congregations are those who aren't willing to invest the sweat equity that it takes. But we must, because it's why we're here. We're not here to inreach. We're not here just to take care of one another and to do programs that are focused on ourselves. We're here to reach the world. And so we've got to be those who have an energy for doing the Lord's work. Now, Satan will see to it that there are some common stiflers that keep us from honoring our commitment to Christ. There aren't enough dedicated workers. You ever heard that said? Or it costs too much. Now, y'all haven't heard that, but you know people do say that sometimes. I don't have time. Growth brings problems. Nobody cares. But adversity, don't we know it, brings about the greatest growth in individuals, but also in churches.
Right.
Someone has said that if our vision is stifled, Satan wins, because there are different ways that we can have vision. We can have tunnel vision. Tunnel vision says there's only one way to do it. And you know what that usually means? My way. One way to do it. Or we've always done it this way. This is the way we've done it. That's going to keep us from reaching our potential as the people of God. Also, we have to avoid mirror vision. Mirror vision? Mirror, mirror on the wall. Who's the greatest Christian of them all? You may be doing more than brother so-and-so, but you're also doing less than sister so-and-so. We need to turn our mirrors into windows so that we can see a lost world that needs Christ. So that we can see eternity. And with that in mind, when we have the thought, when we have the faith, when we have the enthusiasm, and when we expend the energy, then we can do great things. We've already mentioned one example among us of those that do. Now, I had my cell phone, I was going to look at what time. That's how much time I have there. Okay, we'll make that work. How do you put together a vision statement? I'm going to have to speak from what I know. I do not claim to be an expert on that whatsoever. And here's where, if you had the thumb drive and you put this on, this is where that's going to serve you well, because it's a lot of guts to what I'm going to be talking about here, a lot of the detail work, the nuts and the bolts of it. The first one is just an article I wrote on vision. But there are two different approaches that I'm familiar with, and both have seemed to work very well. The first one is born of the time that we spent at the Cold Harbor Road congregation in Mechanicsville, Virginia. And this may be a method or a means or an approach that you're already very familiar with. And this is to have a one-year plan, a two- or three-year plan, and a five-year and beyond plan. That was the approach that was taken. And let me suggest some things with regard to that, and then the other, that is that which we have done at the Bear Valley congregation. There are several advantages to this first plan, this first approach to vision planning and goal setting. Number one, it makes goals seem achievable and more realistic. If it just seems pie in the sky or this is what's going to happen out in the future, it's not helpful. But if we have it on a grid, so to speak, it helps us to see where we're going in bite-sized chunks. Number two, it gives time to reach goals without us having a very nebulous time frame. And now here's where that's going to be helpful. How many of you actually have that thumb drive file, that PDF that Wayne was talking about? Okay, so some of you already have this, many of you still do not. This is going to make more sense to you when you have that. If you can get to the page that says Cold Harbor Road Church of Christ 5-year plan. Future plans, goals, and objectives. Those of you who are here in the front can see this a little bit better. The way that this would work is that we would have a planning session and we would have our men come together and we would dream. And we would set it into different areas. And the table of contents in the front, in the area of evangelism and church growth, worship, missions, education, finance, youth, facility, buildings, grounds, fellowship, visitation, service, community outreach, and a summary of new initiatives. That is what was proposed. This was printed up after we had a planning session. But just to give you a sample of what I'm talking about, this was from the year 2004, the last one I had access to before I moved to Colorado. In evangelism and church growth, there was a goal or an objective. And I'll talk about how those came about in just a moment. And what was going to be done in the year 2004? Right now, what are we going to be doing as a congregation? Now, to me, to an extent, that's revolutionary. To say, here's what we commit ourselves to do right now. All right, but what are we not quite ready for, but we're going to be ready for in a year or two? All right, that's in the next column, 2005, 2006, where the elders would say, here's where it's going to start. We're going to start it by January 1st, 2006. And then we had a little longer range, 2007 to 2009. And that's when we're going to target some of these other objectives. 2010 and beyond, you have a column for every idea that the elders said is at least a possibility. All right? So what you have is a time frame. When are we going to do X? When are we going to do Y? So forth. But then another advantage of this is it can provide a written record of past goals that have been realized. Now let me tell you, I have great confidence in talking about this. I have zero ego about it because I was not responsible for this, nor was I responsible for the thing I'm going to talk about when we get to Bear Valley. But they are both tools that are excellent and have proven themselves to work. It was through this particular means that we were able to start the Cold Harbor Road Lectureship in 1997. It was through this means that we were able to start our Bible curriculum, a five-year program, quite an undertaking that's used in about half of our United States, including Bear Valley, and in several countries across the world. It was through this exercise that we were able to get involved in a television program for 20 years. Several baptisms. You're thinking that you're a small church that are dependent upon outside support, and you're going to have a television program in the capital city area of the state. But it was dreamed first. And then there was an implementation plan to have that put into place. Well, there were other things. It was how we began to have something as simple as a youth rally. It was how we got our original building. It was how we got the expansion to our building. It was how we expanded our parking lot and drew up plans for another facility. All of that came through this exercise. And so I do believe that it provided for those in the congregation incentive to keep dreaming, keep planning, because of what was seen. And you know what happened a lot of times? The things that were put on the 5 years and beyond plan were done in much quicker time. Now, some of those things never have gotten done, but you throw all these things against the wall, and a few of them stick. And those successes build on future successes. And there's more that can be said about that, but here are some keys that made this method work. Four keys that made this particular method work. First, a men's annual planning meeting. I've heard them derided and degraded. I love them. When we went and tried out at the work at Cold Harbor, the men were offered a men's planning session. And I can't tell you how thrilled I was just to know that that was taking place. And then they came back and they gave me a booklet like this, a different one from that earlier year, and to see how they were thinking. Now this men's planning session, even when I was there, was back before cell phones and iPads and other things were the distraction that they can be. But what the elder said was, please unplug and come in as focused as much as you can. That's almost impossible now, but the idea was to focus on being together. We didn't even leave the church building often, but tell your wife just for this evening and in the morning, unless it's an emergency, let's just let us work together and plan together and dream together. And it was very successful. In this session, this planning session, we asked men to dream big and to put whatever ideas they had on the table. Now listen, elders are ultimately responsible for this. Don't let that make you afraid. There were some very outlandish ideas, and a few of them were unscriptural. The elders just very kindly and quietly shuffled those aside. But those that were maybe outlandish but were scriptural could make it into the book, you see. But also, we had to have somebody who served as a secretary who took copious notes and gave it to the elders. And the elders made the final decision on the goals and worked with the deacons in the different areas in this way, saying, here's what has come out of this meeting, and here are some objectives I'd like you to put on the grid. Now, next year, 2 years, 3, 4 years, 5 years, and beyond. Okay, so a men's planning session was very key to this. Number two, a facilitator and a catalyst. Ideally, preacher, if it's somebody else besides you, especially if you're in the pulpit, it would work better. Our facilitator and catalyst was a volunteer associate minister who just had a police and military background. Some of you may know Bill Snell or remember him. He's now passed on. But Bill was a great facilitator, and he got behind it, and he would make the phone calls. He would encourage the deacons and the men to be there, set up a phone tree, get everybody contacted, and he would stand behind everybody and say, all right, and he'd talk to the elders in the meeting and say, all right, what are we going to do now? So this catalyst, this one to really drive it. Number three, consistency. Meet every year. Clarify your goals. Add to them. Take away from them to get your final product. And number four, what made these work was success. Seeing these things that we had dreamed about come into reality. Well, are there any disadvantages of that? Perhaps. Maybe it keeps us from seeing a big picture. To step back and say, where are we, or who are we going to be in 50 years? Or who are we going to be in 20 years? But I do believe that this helps to shape that. And if you have good leadership, you're heading that direction, just a step at a time. Now, I want to introduce, in the few minutes I have left, a completely different approach to it. That is that to step back and to see the great future beyond, the vision planning that we've done at Bear Valley. Sometimes you go 10, 20, 25 years out in the future. What the Bear Valley congregation decided to do was to draw up a 50-year vision. This was a product or an outgrowth of what the school had done. We have a school of preaching there. I'm going to use that terminology. I can explain when I have more time why we call it the Bear Valley Bible Institute, why we don't have a director, we have a president. There are very reasonable answers to that. But I'm going to just call them director, and I'm going to call it school of preaching so we all understand. They drew up a vision plan. A 50-year vision. They had some men in the congregation with that kind of background who sat down with them and said, who do you want to be? What do you want to look like? What do you want to be doing for the Lord in 50 years? This was nothing more than a vision. It's not a creed. Of course, a school, it's different from a church. But it was just a, who are we going to be? Now, some things of importance with regard to this. Denny Petrillo, who is now the director of the school, was not at the time, but he has been at the helm for most of the first 10 years of the 50-year plan. It was signed in April of 2003. And he says some very important areas have been achieved because of this, some financial goals with regard to the school. Perhaps the greatest success of this vision plan has to do with the man who's in this room, Bob Turner. At the back of the room is the extension coordinator for the Bear Valley School. Now, it says here that in 2053, we're going to have 75 schools. You don't just wake up one day and go from zero to 75. You've got to have benchmarks along the way. It has been amazing how using a vision to guide you in that direction has led us to where we are, to the glory of God. There's 15 schools right now in operation, two or three more to come very soon. We're well on our way. Now, we may not make 75, but if we have 35, that's 35 more than we had in 2003 when we started. You have good men in the position to do those kinds of things, and that's important. You have a vision to see it. That's just as important. But he said also, we're not bound to this. He said, when we started this, we had in the vision plan that we were going to have dormitories. So time and observation has made us to deep six that idea. Perhaps it's not as good as we thought. So it's not something you're held to always, but it is something that can guide you in the right direction. So what we did was the congregation engaged in the same process. There's a process that's outlined for you on that PDF. There were the same men involved, randomly interviewed members of the congregation and asked them certain questions. And then out of that, they brought that to the eldership. And then they began to ask questions in meetings. By the way, all the vision meetings, I was there for every one of them. I didn't want to bore you with the tedium and all the volume of the notes that were taken in those meetings, but there were Why would you not want to engage in this? Answer me, no, not a, we don't think you should. It's a, see if you don't want to engage in this. And why would you not? Now, why would you not honor a decision that comes out of this? All right, we also talked about commitment. We talked about communication. We talked about delegation. We talked about priorities. And out of that came this 1,000-word vision statement that was unrolled in 2008. Again, just so I'm clear, this is not a creed. This is who we want to be, what we want to be doing, and where we want to be doing it in 50 years. Now, something we're learning is that if you're going to get there, you don't wake up and this be a reality. You have to take benchmarks. You have to incrementally bite this off a little at a time. How do you get to the point where you have so many elders and so many deacons and so many members? It starts one step at a time. And I don't have time to really go through that except to say this. But the first ministry area that we broke out of this was education. Everything we did, we tried to honor this vision statement, which comes straight from what Scripture says, and try to build our education program. We've had some successes and some failures in that. For us to succeed through the end, we're going to have to set benchmarks, little goals all along the way in order for us to reach that. The other thing that's come out of the vision, it's about 4 years old already, is this little pen I have on, Think Souls. Think Souls is not a program. It is not a theme for a year. It's an emphasis. If we are the Church of the New Testament, shouldn't we be thinking souls?
Yes, that's right.
Now, and what all that's being done kind of funnels from what we've said that we want to be doing. Can we change this? Absolutely. But we've got to ask ourselves, where do we want to be as the people of God in the future? Well, I wish I had more to say about that. I'm sorry for not using my time at the front end more wisely, but I will say this. Robert Samuelson, the writer, was talking about the European nations in Western Europe. And what you have there is a shrinking population and you have a longer living elderly population. And they want things to be like they've always been. They want to live in two worlds. They want to live in a democracy but also in socialism. They want to be those individuals who have welfare but also economic freedom. They want things to continue to be like they have always been. That's human nature, isn't it? He says something there that's very significant. He says, the status quo is unsustainable. I've preached a sermon by that title. Think about that. The status quo is unsustainable. In other words, it can't always be like it is. It's either going to be getting better or it's going to be getting worse. Think about the church. Is it not true that a church is either growing or it's dying? It's going forward or it's going backward. It's getting stronger or it's getting weaker. I believe that planning, setting goals, and going about to achieve them will help us not to be content with the status quo. And in that regard, we can say where there is no vision, the people perish. Hopefully these things can be helpful and certainly you can improve upon them. But take this information, these ideas, and see their merit and talk to me if they don't have it. Thank you, brother.
Just one change to what we're going to do with the PDF. Brother Joey Davis and the Roanoke congregation near Dallas has volunteered to upload that to the web, and we will put a link to that so you can just go and download it, and we'll share that with you a little later, either tonight or in the morning, and put that on our website, a link to that as well, so you can visit there and have that, especially maybe planning on leaving. I got an email from Neil a little earlier in the year questioning the dates for Focal Point and the conflict with their gospel meeting. And I've thanked him a number of times. I want to personally, or publicly, although they're not here, thank the elders of the Bear Valley congregation for allowing Neil to be here with us. My heart sunk when he told me of the conflict, and we were able to work it out, and he could be here. And I know that if we implement at least the principle and concept, thinking beyond today, our churches will be stronger. and our communities will be affected because we will eventually think souls. And so, brother, we appreciate you being here, appreciate the message. I'm going to ask Brother John Warrens, if he will, to stand where he is, lead us in a dismissal prayer. Also from the Bear Valley congregation, works with the school there, and has brought a number of individuals here with us this year to support us, and we appreciate it, and they won't be with us much longer. And so we ask him to lead a prayer. Let's all be standing.